So yesterday, what we did, we kind of derived the path integral formulation of the propagator. Okay, so we really started from the Schrödinger picture, or if you want the picture in terms of operators, and at the end we end up with an expression that is just expressed in terms of classical function and as an exponential of minus 1 over h bar. S is now the Euclidean because we perform a weak rotation, and we have this kind of integration that shouldn't be confused with a usual integration, which means that here that we integrate over all possible paths that satisfy this boundary condition here. Okay, so this is kind of the main result. And then, so in the quiz, one of your questions was, why are we going to the path integral formulation? So there are different answers to these questions. First, it's another formulation for quantum mechanics. Okay, here we haven't seen totally that it's an equivalence because we're starting from one side and we prove the other side kind of, but you know that in the operational framework, or by operational, I just mean that when it's if you want the Hamiltonian framework, once you know the time evolution operator, then you know how to solve your problem, okay? Because it's kind of give you the time evolution for your state or for your operator, depending on which picture you're working on. So if you know this object, kind of, you know, this means that your quantum mechanical problem has been solved in some sense. Okay, so here we have another way to represent this object in a different way, which is always useful. And this representation, so, and in the tutorial this afternoon, you're going to use, kind of go the other way around. Start from the path integral formulation and see that you can indeed recover some well-known property that you used to with the more operational framework, in particular the fact that operators do not commute. Okay, so how do you get that from this formulation? You can recover. So you will have kind of an equivalence here. And of course, not all problems are going to be, it's not going to be super useful to use this formalism to treat any problem. For example, yesterday we tried to write explicitly the propagator for the free particle in terms of the using this path integral formulation, and you have seen that it's much more complicated than just using the expression in terms of operator. So in this context, of course, you can see why are we doing that. But we're going to see that in some contexts, it's super useful to have that, and in particular, when you will go to quantum field theory, for some of the theory, if you don't have the path integral formulation, in particular for gauge theory, you won't be able to go very far. Okay, so this is kind of useful, and so the next two things I will do in this lecture mainly are going to talk about the semi-classical expansion, which is something that is also quite done very naturally in this formalism. So what is the, when h bar goes to zero, what is the main the leading order, and then what are the corrections? Okay, so this is what we're going to finish today. So this is something for what this formulation is useful, and then it's going also to be useful when we want to go to perturbative theory. So by perturbative theory, I'm going to say that we're going to have a system that we don't really know how to solve exactly, okay? But usually we will be able to separate the system in a what we call the free part plus some perturbation, and then look at just the perturbation in a perturbative way. And this is indeed the way, like, I'm sure all of you at least heard about Feynman diagrams, where Feynman diagrams are going to appear as a kind of very efficient diagrammatic method that is going to encode all the perturbation at different level. And again, when we will go to quantum field theory, when you will look at the scattering between particles, this is the kind of thing that you're going to do. Okay, usually you won't be able to solve exactly your system, but you can go order by order at the perturbative level. And it's going to be very similar to what we're going to do. Okay, so this is regarding kind of why are we going to the path integral. So mainly in the quantum mechanical property, it's mainly to get you ready for QFT, because most of the thing can be done using this approach, just in terms of operators. But you will see that it also gives some nice interpretation in some context. For example, if you were looking I guess all of you have heard about these double slit experiments where you have a screen and you have two slits, and how are the, yeah, if you have a bins of electrons on the last screen, what is the kind of picture you see? You see that in the this framework in terms of operator, what you lose is the kind of notion of trajectory for a particle. Whereas here, you recover it, and it's even used. Okay, you have that it's not following the classical one, but it can take different things, different trajectories. And so, for example, for this kind of experiments, it's allowed to have an interpretation of this of the result much simply than in terms of operators. Okay, so there are still contexts where it's allowed to have a nicer interpretation. Okay, so. Now I want to go to the semi-classical expansion. And so this is the starting point. This is our class Euclidean action. So the sign here, the relative sign is due to the, again, the fact that we did the weak rotation. So it's what I call Euclidean one. And now the idea is that I can choose my variable the way I want, kind of. So in a situation where I'm able to compute explicitly what is the classical solution of my system, it's sometimes interesting to kind of recenter my path on this classical solution. Meaning that my path now, the path I'm going to consider are going to be the classical path plus some perturbation plus some quantum fluctuation, if you want. So here the idea is that as I know this solution and I want to choose it in such a way that these boundary conditions are solved, and then which will imply that my fluctuation are going to satisfy this at the boundary, are equal to zero at the boundary. So then what I said yesterday is that from that, what we want to do is to perform kind of a Taylor expansion using usual functional derivative here. I can write my action as a power series here. So I have the action evaluated on the classical path, that this I should know. Then I have this here, I just wrote at the order of h bar. So I have three terms that we're going to study now independently. So let me, it seems that this is not broken anymore. So let's try. Yoo-hoo. Amazing. Okay.
So why do we expand over the square root of h, not h?
Okay, so yeah, why? So this is a good question. So one aspect is that then it kind of, you see that the dominant term is going to be the quadratic term, and it's like independent of h bar, okay? And also it's, there are some interpretation of the quantum fluctuation as Brownian motion, okay? And the fact that you have this, you put out the square root of h bar here, kind of make that more explicit, this link more explicit, okay? Because it's characteristic of a Brownian motion, this kind of thing. So I won't, I won't give more details, but it's kind of, you could also just call this fluctuation like y, and then you keep some h here, and then you don't have this so obvious interpretation, but here, so I've chosen this normalization, okay? But it's just a factor here, okay? Okay, so obviously the first one is, we know x of c, so it's going to be just an evaluation of the action on this classical path. Then the second term is the first derivative. And since we evaluate this on the classical action by definition, so what is this? What if you compute that explicitly, what do you get?
Movement equations, Euler Lagrange.
Yeah, the Euler Lagrange equation, okay? The way you, if you want to prove that when you extremize your action, you get the Euler Lagrange equation, is what you request is that this object is equal to zero, and this object gives you explicitly the Euler Lagrange equation. And so since here we evaluated the classical solution, by definition, this means that this is zero in this term. Okay, so now we want to compute the, but let's kind of maybe do it explicitly in this, with this specific form to get then to the second order. So here, I'm just going to give you the main steps, and then since from the quiz it seems that some of you are not totally familiar with functional derivatives, then you will kind of work a bit on it together during the tutorial this afternoon. I don't want to do everything myself, because usually when you take notes from the blackboard, it seems obvious, but then when you have yourself a function and you need to do it, it's kind of another story. So, and since I have a lot that I want to do, so here I'm just going to kind of use a trick. So I'm going to give you this trick that we're going to use several times, if, in fact, because it's kind of allowed to sometimes simplify things. So this is my starting point, my action. And I'm going to rewrite it doing an integration by part. So yeah, I'm going to forget about the boundary. So here, I'm just doing an integration by part. So I have a kind of a boundary term here that you can we will have to evaluate between. And so now I'm left with, so I did an integration by part on this term. So now I'm left with and the other term is unchanged. So here, then now, I'm going to kind of give you the, using that. So I'm still going to write explicitly what is this, because indeed the idea is that you need the first, to compute the second derivative, you need the first one. And, but here I'm going to keep track of these boundary terms that usually we kind of forgot just because, we may need it for the second iteration. Okay, so here, from this boundary term that, so here this is the difference between this term evaluated on t prime prime minus this one evaluated at the same term evaluated at t prime. So from that, what you get, if you do the differential, the functional derivative with respect to x, you get some delta of t prime prime. So this is coming from, this term. Okay, and again, if it's not very clear to you now, we're going to work on it during the tutorial. And then from this term, so I have minus m over 2, but I have two contributions, so I am going to get a minus m simply, and the second derivative of x with respect to t. And here, this part is going to be the usual equation of motion, okay? So the Euler Lagrange. Here is just contrary to what you're doing usually when you derive the Euler Lagrange equation, is that I'm keeping track of the boundary term, okay? So this term now is coming from this one. And one trick, so I asked you yesterday to kind of prove, for example, this relation. And this was also one question from the quiz. When you have some t that can be fixed to a given value in some of the function and anything. So again, you will do things really explicitly in the tutorial. But so I wanted you to prove that. And maybe just if you... one trick that we're using and that is also useful to compute maybe the boundary term here is that when you have that's your function, that the idea here is to rewrite it as an integral of dq over d tau, where now it's not fixed, and you add a delta function. Okay, so this kind of thing that you can you can do. So again, I will you will work on that. So this is, yeah, the first derivative. So now we need to go to the second one. And we want, ideally, to take the functional derivative with x evaluated at two different points, OK? And so here, what you get is, so if you take the derivative of this term, okay, the only contribution comes from here because this is there is no x dependence. And so that is going to simplify into this. I'm going to write it explicitly. And for this term explicitly, you use what I just wrote here in terms of the q variable for the x. So you get a derivative of a delta function between t1 minus t2. And we keep this delta. This is unchanged, except that now it's from t1 t prime. OK, so again, this term is just taking, reiterating the derivation to get this one, plus a term that I'm going to write explicitly, but I need some space that is going to come from the derivative of the, in fact, the equation of motion, which is this term. Now it's going to give you this one. Okay, so before writing explicitly, because it's going to be the only relevant one, few remarks on this one. Okay, so how are we going to use this term? This term is going to appear in an integration where we multiply by u tau 1, u tau 2, okay? So when it's going to be put into the integration, then because you have some delta function, okay, of t1 is tau prime prime or tau prime, okay, you see that what are we going to see this term or what is going to happen here? So if I call this term, let's give it a name, then my question is about so if I consider this term, it's going to appear in my integration. So what can you say about this term? How did we choose? So you have a delta. This delta. So this means that each time you're going for each, you're going to get two terms, but each time you're going to get a term with a u of t prime prime or u of tau prime. Okay, and how did we choose here our function is that they vanish at the boundary. Okay, so here this is zero because we have this choice. But you see that this term could have been important if we had another splitting of our function here. Okay, so that's why we need, it's good, still good to keep track of it. And not always remove it. It's because it's really important of your choice of boundary condition, any boundary term. And another, so this is about, what can we say about this term? Eta, so the first fact is that it's not going to contribute here because of this choice in the integration. And then the idea is if we want to go to the other term, so take the third derivative of our action, is it going to contribute or not? If I now take the functional derivative of this term with respect to x, Remy?
It doesn't return a minus.
Yeah. So it's like, so it disappears at the next order. Because it's independent of x.
Sorry. May I ask what do you mean by the derivative of third function? Is the third prime?
Sorry?
The derivative over the third function is the third prime. Because I think this should be minus third prime.
For the sign here?
Yes.
You have... Yeah, there is a sign if you go from tau to... No, it's a minus if it was a tau here under, I think.
I see. But delta is kind of an even function, so...
Yeah, so indeed you're right that if you write this as a derivative over tau, then you get a minus sign, okay? But I will let you, again... It's indeed tricky. When you do that, you can do that really explicitly doing using the definition and really see clearly how the sign coming from. So we're going to come back this afternoon on that, okay? But yeah, it's indeed a good a good question. Okay, so yeah, this was this term that at the end is not really important in our context, but mainly because of our choice of boundary here. So now let's have a look at the other term that is going to be the main ingredient we're going to use. So what is this operator? So it's coming from, you take the functional derivative of this function here, of this functional, more precisely, more than function, and what you get is an operator. So let me write it explicitly. With a second derivative. Second derivative with respect to of the potential. And I'm missing a M. Okay. That you have a delta function here. And then from here, so the only, if we go to the third derivative, then the only contribution, so let me write it, and then we're going to focus on this object, okay? So again, this is maybe quick, but I prefer you to do it kind of. And here, so if you take the third derivative, so you need to take the functional derivative of this object, the only x, the only part that is still dependent on x is the v potential, okay? So here you get the third derivative of, and then you add some, you still have some delta function. So what is kind of important as a result here is that the kinematic part, that was this m x dot squared over 2 is only appearing until the second order, okay? And then from that, the only contribution you will get is from your potential. And so you can see indeed already that depending on what is your potential, in particular, if it's a quadratic potential, then this part is going to be zero, meaning that all the rest of the, all the other contribution will be zero, okay? So here we can already see that, depending on your choice of V, then this expression that you have here can even be exact in some context. Okay, so this is kind of, what we need. So now if we use this, what is our So the idea is to write the semi-classical expansion of our propagator here. Okay, so let's now write what is this propagator. Okay, so the first term, so you see I'm using, of course, the path integral formulation here. Okay, so I have this exponential of minus s e of x, and now I want to use my Taylor expansion of this action. So the first term is the action evaluated at the classical, on the classical solution. That can go out because it's now just a number. And again, this is something, if you remember when we did the explicitly the path integral, we computed the propagator for the free particle. It's what we found is that you have a part that is the exponential of your action evaluated at the classical part plus times something else. Okay, so here this is really a general feature. You can see it from this exponent. And then now we want to kind of, we have a path integral now on this function, where the measure can be on the function u, on the fluctuation. So this means that we indeed, we kind of integrate over the quantum fluctuation here. And we consider all possible quantum fluctuations satisfying this property here. So then I'm going to add a factor that is coming from, yeah, this n is just, could be absorbed in the measure. It's kind of coming from the Jacobian and the other term that was left out. But it's an, again, it's an overall factor. It's not really important because usually what we are interested in is to see how each the difference between the differences between the different contributions. So which one has the highest weight or this kind of thing. So here is just an overall contribution that is going to multiply all the things the same way. So then the important part that is dominant is going to be this function. And it's kind of a Gaussian integration that we have to do here for this operator A. Okay, so yeah, maybe it's better to write it if we want to write it as a matrix. So it's a continuum thing, but if we want to write it in a kind of a matricial form, let's put it this way. Even if here it doesn't have. And then we can expand the other term. And we have the. We have the contribution coming from the third derivative of V that will have to be evaluated at. Okay, so once again, we have this separation in two parts. This part that is the classical, the evaluation of the action on the classical path. And here we take into account the deviation from this classical path. Okay, so this is our kind of semi-classical expansion that we have. So now the question is, how do we deal with that? So we're going to focus on a specific example, but the main part is going to be able to compute this object. Okay. So the specific example we're going to take is the harmonic oscillator. So yeah, the potential then is quadratic, so this term is going to vanish, and we're going to have an exact expression here, and compute explicitly what this A is in this context. But so here, what is the notion that we need to compute this object is the notion, so you see it's kind of a Gaussian integral. But that is a bit generalized compared to maybe what you're familiar with. So let's maybe give some details here. So the notion that you need is the notion of, yeah, so let me maybe now the two next steps are once you have this kind of thing, if you want to do something explicitly, of course, this is a general expression, is to determine x of c, so the classical path, and then to compute the quadratic integral here that you have here. But in U, that is evolving the operator A. So let's focus on this aspect. For this, the idea is kind of what you need is a kind of notion of functional determinant and the idea is here is that it's a generalization of if you consider A would be an Hermitian. So let's take the case that you should know maybe. So example, if A is n times n Hermitian matrix. Let's say that we could also add that he has positive definite eigenvalues. But we call lambda k. K go from 1 to n at the maximum. Then you have this expression usually. That I'm not going to prove, but maybe you prove it in the front end. I don't know. So 1/2 of and this would be equal to it's a kind of generalization of a Gaussian. And then you have the determinant of A. So if you know the eigenvalues, of course, the determinant of A is just the product of this eigenvalue. So here, what you have divided by the product of over k of the lambda k. Sorry, maybe it's too low. And so here the idea is that in fact you get, yeah, here we don't have a Hermitian matrix, okay? It's an operator that is continuous eigenvalue. But the idea is that we can still define the determinant of an operator when we will have an infinite product of eigenvalue that of course we need to regularize at some point. But here we're still going to say that the determinant of our A is going to be a product of eigenvalue. So what we have to do here to compute the quadratic integral of u is in fact to kind of solve an eigenvalue problem for our operator A, okay? And so to do that, let's just do an explicit example because it's going to be useful anyway to have this, to know this path integral because again, as we're going to see, then to go to the perturbative theory, usually what we're going to say is that, oh, we have a Hamiltonian now or Lagrangian that is a free part and usually the free part can be, we won't have so many systems that we can consider for us will be either the free particle or the Hamiltonian, okay? A quadratic that has a quadratic potential. And anyway, it's still useful to do it explicitly because it's kind of general for any quadratic Lagrangian. It's going to work for any quadratic Lagrangian because again, we have this expression above, but now if it's a quadratic Lagrangian, this other term is going to vanish, okay? So meaning that the only thing, this result for quadratic Lagrangian can be kind of written as, so in our case, if we consider quadratic Lagrangian, the result of the path integral is just going to be, so our k is going to be just a constant that is coming from this normalization thing times the exponential of minus s evaluated at the classic, on the classical action, times kind of the determinant of this operator. Okay, and in the constant you put, yeah, this factor coming out, the n over there, some other things, but yeah, this is the main part. So you see that really in the case of the harmonic oscillator, really what we have to do is to find this and this. Okay. Okay, so any questions here? So what is V in the case of the harmonic oscillator? I'm going to give it to you and then and so in this case, obviously, the third derivative with respect to x of this is zero. And then, so what is A, the operator A in this context? So I let you write it. So this is the definition, okay? So I let you 130 seconds to write it. I guess this is.
What's that first term in K?
Sorry. I just want to say, to write constant, so it was a CST, but maybe I can. It's kind of not obvious, so. It seems that you are not the only one with this question. Yeah, you can call it, I don't know, it's just I have so many letters that I didn't choose another letter that could be confusing, but it seems that was still confusing. Thanks for the clarification. Yeah, just to point out that you have two main ingredients to compute, okay? And then anyway, because we're going to see that usually we use really the free particle case to normalize, so this constant is kind of going to disappear, be reabsorbed because it's going to be in both cases. So really, the relevant parts are really these two things. Yeah.
So on the idea is that the A is going to be treated, so that integral is going to be treated as a Gaussian integral. So in particular, yeah. The particular case, the harmonic oscillator, that derivative vanishes, right?
Yeah.
In the in case that it doesn't vanish, then we have to calculate the expectation value of that derivative. That
mm-hmm. Yeah. So if it's not vanishing, then it's kind of so you will still have a you still can compute this part. So you will still have the Gaussian part. Easier than then either you stop your expansion at the level of square root of h bar and you don't compute the other term, and then you it just an approximation, a semi-classical approximation to your theory, or if you want to go to higher order, you have seen that it's given by the third derivative, and then you compute this but then it will give you an expansion in terms of h bar around your classical solution. Okay, so really the point is here in the case of the harmonic oscillator and any quadratic Lagrangian, then what is nice is that in fact doing this semi-classical expansion give you something exact here, like at the because you don't have the correction. But then if you go out, yeah, if it's not quadratic, then you will have correction that are correction around the classical solution. Okay, so it's your perturbation or your quantum fluctuation that appear at the order of h bar. Okay, and you can go, you see that here you have like only the third term, but obviously the fourth and next term will be given in terms of derivative of your potential. So, kind of an easy way to to continue this expansion.
Well, and in finite dimensions, when we want to calculate an integral of the form, that Gaussian integral,
yeah,
but we want to calculate the u cubed, right? So we want to calculate, put into the Gaussian integral that we have below that an x cubed, right?
So your question, if you reintroduce that within the exponential?
No, no, not to reintroduce it. I'm just saying that that when we put that x cubed down in the finite dimensional exponential, we have a nice way of calculating by counting diagrams with three vertices,
yep,
right? Would,
yep,
that work here, even if it's not finite dimensional?
Yeah, we're going to, yeah. Okay. We're going to do that. Good point. Okay, everyone has this operator for the harmonic oscillator. What is it?
That expression, instead of the partial square, you have f omega squared.
Yeah, so you have omega squared coming out. Times, yeah, very good. So now, again, we have two tasks, compute x of c and this, okay? So the first one is, and again, I'm not going to give all the details of the calculation. So if some things are not clear, please, yeah, let me know. So this is going to be quite simple. Then the second times will be to find the eigenvalue. Of A. So that is, we need to solve eigenvalue equation. So what is this equation you want to solve explicitly? Which equation do you need to write here? What does it mean to find the eigenvalue of A when A is this kind of operator?
We want to multiply it by some f of t2 and integrate that.
Mm-hmm.
T2, right? That's,
and then,
equivalent of applying A to F, right?
Yeah.
And we want that to be a number times F of T1, maybe?
Yep. Okay, so here the function we want is this kind of U, okay? So let's, indeed, so here this exactly means what you just said. We want, so because we have a delta function, your integration you were mentioning is going to go away, okay? So of a function, I keep the u, t1 is equal to, okay, so because the idea is, yeah, we kind of want to diagonalize this thing, then we really have a kind of Gaussian integral and we kind of have this result. Where here, we want to keep in mind that we want that u of t prime are equal to 0. Okay, this is the, okay, so these are two tasks. So obviously I'm just going to, so let's go to the first one. So we need to find the solution of the equation of motion that is just this will give us the classical solution with boundary condition again, x of c k prime. And so here I'm just giving you the result just to show you that, or you can check explicitly that it solves this equation, it satisfies the boundary condition. So I have a sinh function, omega and I have a this is my boundary condition, so I already solve the boundary condition. Plus x prime. So this is, yeah, you're familiar with this notation or sinh function? Okay, and so now the idea is once you have this solution, you want to explicitly write this. Where here, I don't want to do all the steps, but I just want to give you a kind of a trick. Because if you try to plug that and then perform this integration, so what is, yeah, sorry, my M is here. Okay, so this is, what does it mean to evaluate this? So you plug this expression, you take the first derivative, and then you do the integration explicitly. This is one option. As you can see, it's not like, it sounds like complicated. So I'm going to give you kind of a nice kind of a trick here. So again, if you do integration by part, once again, what do we get? So we get this first term of that now is evaluated at t prime, tau prime, and tau prime prime. So here it's an integration by part again. And you're left with this term. So you still have the 1/2 of m omega square. And now you have the minus m of x of c, and then the second derivative. Okay. And so I'm telling you that this is simpler. Why? What can you say here? What can you, well, this term is going to be the evaluation of this function. You still need to perform the first derivative, but you don't have any integration to do. It's really just an evaluation of your function. Here, why is it simpler? Because it seems that you have this second derivative now.
Yeah.
Do you need to compute the second derivative or?
Yeah,
okay, so everything, it's obvious for everyone. This is zero because of the equation of motion, okay? So it's x of c, yeah, you can factorize things and you get that this is zero equation of motion. Okay, so this was just to give you kind of a trick that it's valid most of the time. Instead of kind of performing explicitly this integration, you can do this thing. So then I can give you the explicit result when you simplify everything. And well, it's not super interesting, but let's write it. Otherwise, it's in the lecture notes. So you have SH of omega. I'm going to call big T the difference between this difference. So just to simplify, tau prime prime, tau prime. And then here it's x prime. A cosh of omega t minus 2 x prime prime. Okay, so this is the action evaluated on the classical solution. And of course you can check what you get when omega equal to zero, you should, as expected, recover the free particle. Okay, so now we can solve this equation to find explicitly what is A, okay? and then we will be, then we will have our solution. So let's again not write all the steps, but give you the main idea.
Yeah, I don't exactly get why you get that solution. Like, why is x theta a solution of that? How do you get that?
This solution here?
Yeah.
But this is, second order. It's a differential equation, second order.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have, like, and then depending on the sign that you have here, you know that you have this exponential with the I or without the I. So you.
Yeah, without the I. So, like, why is your solution so complicated? Like, I expect my solution to be exponential of
something. Yeah, it's, but these are some exponential. It's just because you want to solve. So if you write explicitly, like in terms of A exponential with this omega no, plus B exponential minus omega or something like this.
Yeah.
Okay, then you want to solve this boundary condition. Okay, so indeed your solution is going to be in this form. Then you want to solve your boundary condition. So
I'm not sure with what the notation means. So x tau prime equals x prime.
So it means that
points at tau.
So this is the boundary condition. So this means that this is a function of tau. Okay, like this is maybe the general form. So now you want to. So let's say that this is. Then you want to evaluate, you want that when it's t prime, you get the x prime, okay? So if you want a omega exponential of omega t prime plus b exponential of minus omega t prime has to be equal to x prime. And then you do the same thing for in t prime prime, okay? And so you end up with this expression, okay? And yeah, so you can check indeed that here if you replace tau by tau prime, then this term is going to vanish. Then you get this one that is going to simplify with this one, so you get exactly x prime. Okay? So it's indeed now. Yeah, good. Any other questions? Okay, so. So now, again, you have a second order differential equation, but which is inhomogeneous, meaning you have a second term to solve to find the eigenvalue of A. And I'm not going to give you the solution. So here we want to solve this kind of equation with, again, it's again very important to have the boundary condition. So here now you add another term, okay, in U, and you want U of t prime equals 0. So the solution of that is, so it's labeled by n because we have kind of some periodic condition to of a sin function now pi n over t. With the eigenvalue given by so I really encourage you to try to check that indeed this is working, and here n can be any integer non-zero. And so we're almost done. So we kind of solve our problem. But now, in order to avoid divergences here, we kind of normalize by the case V equals 0. So we have all our ingredients. It's just that now what I want to do is write, I'm going to normalize. Divided by k zero of the so here it's case v equals zero, so it's just a normalization to avoid different divergences. So this means that here what we get is minus that now we have explicitly in the case of the harmonic oscillator. Because I'm divided by the case v equals zero, here I'm going to have a plus 1 over h bar of s zero evaluated at. Okay, so this is where here it's not the same solution. It's the solution for the case v equals zero, the classical solution for the case v equals zero. Okay, so you understand this notation. Here I'm just really using the expression we add of k, which is a constant time this exponential minus the exponential minus s evaluated at the classical solution times this determinant. So here is the first term that we have divided by this one. Okay, and then I will have a product of eigenvalue where at the denominator, because it's 1 over the determinant, the square root of the determinant, it's the eigenvalue I just computed. And at the numerator, I will have the eigenvalue for the case v equals 0. And then I still have my square root. Where here, you can check that in the case v equals 0, we will just have the same thing, except that we don't have the omega part, okay?
Sorry.
Is that, yeah.
Why n should be greater than zero?
Here?
Yes.
Yeah, if you consider negative
values. So you're looking for eigenvalues, right? And an eigenvalue cannot have as associated eigenvector a zero vector. And if you put n equals zero, you get u sub zero equals
zero. Yeah. So I think but your question is not the zero, it's the negative part, no? Was it the zero?
What? Yes, the zero.
Ah, okay, thanks. So then you understood correctly the question and your answer correctly the question. So thank you.
I do have a question. And why do we restrict ourselves? So those are the solutions. If we assume that m omega squared minus lambda is going to be negative, right? Because then we're in the usual harmonic oscillator. But what if m omega squared minus lambda was positive?
So you have some restriction on the one you want from kind of this theorem. So the one you want to find, like above, like you see for, like it would be.
You want like the positive definite.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So you restrict your.
Okay.
But the equivalent of that, okay? That it's kind of well defined. You have a square root then, so yeah, like here.
Okay.
This is kind of problem you want to solve. Okay, good question. And this expression is clear? Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you, sure. So we started up from the one way at the top, and then we said that our k is equal to the constant times the exponential in the case of the quadratic. So that's the one we're using on
the second way. Yeah. Okay. So here, what I'm just saying is that, so this is the general expression. We're focusing on quadratic Lagrangian. That could be also v equals zero, because it's going to work the same way, except that this will be simpler. You don't have this term, okay? The a would be. So for any, until quadratic Lagrangian, you have this kind of expression. So now, I'm saying that I don't want to deal with this constant, and also to get rid of different divergences, we're going to normalize this by the k equals zero, but they both have the same form. Okay, so here I kind of expand them both in this form that I wrote here, except that the k equals zero, the v equals zero case is at the denominator, so that's why you have a plus appearing here, and you have the product of the lambda that will be at the top. Okay, but also what is nice is that now, so first we have an expression of that, we have an explicit expression of everything, but we also have an explicit expression of that that we computed with another way. Okay. So now we can really write explicitly what this is, this object, just by saying that. So now, is going to be this k0 that we computed the other time. Okay, you remember? We have an explicit expression. Time all these things that I have here. So exponential of 1 over h bar of minus xc plus s0 0. And still this product of eigenvalue that can be simplified, kind of, if you want. I don't know if you're going to see that as a simplification or not, but let's say that it's an additional step that is done. So I have a product over n of 1 over 1 plus omega squared. And sorry, I'm writing small here. I'm going to rewrite it on the n squared. And you still have a square root. So let me write it maybe bigger. What is this object? Because anyway, so this thing here, we're going to use that we know, or if you don't know, you can try to prove it. So this is what I wrote here in the denominator. It's the n squared. Okay, so this is n greater than zero. And in fact, this can be written as a sinh function of omega t divided by omega t. Okay, so using that plus what we computed the other time and all these objects, then we get the
sorry, I have another question. Why n cannot be negative?
Okay, let me write the final result, and then why n is again, yeah. So we restrict ourselves to like positive eigenvalues in our case. Okay. So, well, and then anyway, do we get? Well, let me finish this and think about it at the same time. So then, yeah, we are able to get the explicit expression of the propagator for the harmonic oscillator using where we use the path integral formalism here. So we have this factor coming from the k0. Okay, and you should check. Then the sinh here is coming from the product of the eigenvalue. And you have this exponential of minus m and you can check that indeed this is just the evaluation of your action on the classical solution. So then you have this. Omega t. Okay, so this is, and this is here the exact result. Okay, so this is for the harmonic oscillator. Okay, so here we kind of use a semi-classical expansion, but at the end we show that in the case of quadratic Lagrangian, this allows us to compute explicitly the propagator for our given system, okay, which is here explicitly the harmonic oscillator, but this, what we did could be done for any Lagrangian, quadratic Lagrangian. Then I'm not going to spend more time on this semi-classical expansion, but really, so you see that now you were having a system with not described as a quadratic Lagrangian. You could look at correction to the semi-classical approximation, okay, very easily by just performing the derivative of your, explicitly the derivative of your potential. And this could be, yeah, so this is useful, these kind of techniques are useful if you are interested in your system close to the semi-classical, close to the classical limit where h bar goes to zero, or if you were dealing with some tunneling phenomena, this would be also kind of a useful approximation to consider. Yeah?
How do we like interpret our result here? Because we know, like, we have an understanding of how the harmonic oscillator works, so like, but I don't, like, I don't see the, how I can look at that and then get the harmonic oscillator solutions.
Okay, so here, again, what it's telling you is that, so this is really telling, so it's a propagator, so it's saying you are, yeah, you're going to, starting from, with kind of boundary condition satisfied. And so here again, this, here you don't have only the classical contribution, you have also all the quantum part here. And as we noticed it before, what is also interesting in this model is that here you have the exponential that is in fact just your action evaluated at the classical solution. So this is a part. And this part is taking into account kind of the quantum fluctuation, if you want, that we have integrated over because we consider all possible paths here, satisfying this boundary condition. So you still have these two contributions from your.
So then how do we get like solutions to the quantum? Like, I'm having a hard time. Like,
so you want to go back to, in terms of operators or what?
I just like, we have this result, but then how do we use it to understand our system?
Okay, so, yeah, so your, I see your question. So your question would be, I have a usual problem in quantum mechanics. So what do you try to get usually in quantum mechanics? You try to find the, for example, the position operator, and you want to have what is the value, but it's in terms of as an operator. So then, yeah, your question. Okay, so I understand your question. So to answer it explicitly, I will have to think about an explicit maybe problem that you're familiar with the harmonic oscillator and how to translate it this way. Okay, so let me think about it and come back to it.
Essentially, an evolution from, like, I think she's trying to ask what's the purpose of this propagator?
Kind of, yeah. Like, what's the,
why are we doing?
Because here, yeah, this is, so this kind of, so the point is that your, this is really your propagation, the time evolution operator that is represented in the position basis, okay? And now you have really an explicit expression for it. So usually your time evolution operator, you keep it as an exponential, where h, you keep it as an operator, okay? But then here, what you really have is really the matrix element of all of that. So you know all your, you have access to all the time evolution operator. It's just that you chose a specific representation here that is a position representation, okay? So usually, maybe what you're more used in quantum mechanics is because then you deal with that on abstract vector. okay? Whereas here, you could, now you have like, you have the representation in terms of position representation of the subject. So once you have that, you remember that any, yeah, maybe this is the way to answer your question, which we're starting, is that, so this can be written as U, okay, you agree. Now I want to introduce the position representation. So I'm going to introduce the X, then I will have a U X, X sign. So now if you look at this object in the position representation too, okay, meaning that you look at what you would call a wave function, your wave function, then this is indeed given by, and now you know this explicitly, which is given by here. Okay, this is what I call K. Okay, so you can, in terms of wave function now, if you know your initial wave function, which is like, so here, yeah, usually I'm not using T equals zero as an initial condition, but T prime, then you have a T prime here, you have a T prime prime here, then if you know this one, you have this matrix element. So you know all of them explicitly, okay? So, is it answering your question?
And like, how would you find like the energy level? Like we know that we look at like, oh, what are the values of the energy level?
Yeah, so this is a good question. And indeed, this is what we're going to be interesting in the perturbative theory, meaning that, so the idea is that your, yeah, this is indeed a good question. Which kind of object or function can we represent as path integral? Or can we use, or more specifically, because here the only thing that you know how to write as a path integral is the propagator. So how, for example, your question would be, if you want to think about your question, is that if you have the energy level, how the energy level can be related to the propagator or the time evolution operator. And this is going to be, we're going to introduce, so maybe not now, because I want to introduce something that you will need for the tutorial this afternoon before the end. But we're going to see that indeed, if you now like look at this operator in the, instead of using the position basis, if you use the energy basis of your Hamiltonian, okay, the N, then you see that here, indeed, this is related to, it's going to be, in this representation, it's going to be the exponential of minus 1 over h bar the sum over En, okay, where E, N are your energy level. So this means that, and you can, you know how to go from one representation to the other, so you can expect that you will be able to write, to deduce from the path integral formulation, some of the energy level, okay? This is, so usually the object that we're going to consider to talk about energy level is going to be the partition function, which is the trace of this matrix element here, because you can get, kind of get rid of, I'm going to write it explicitly, so don't worry tomorrow. You can get rid of the function you chose if you chose normalized basis, and then you can really have an expression of your energy level. So yeah, all your questions. So now what you should have in mind is that what you have is you have a representation. You can explicitly represent the matrix element of your time evolution operator. But you know that the time evolution operator is usually the object, the central object you need to solve a quantum mechanical problem. So now this means that at least like here, this is exact. And we're going to see that otherwise it's going to be perturbative in other systems. But we will have this access to all these matrix elements. So how can you relate that to all the questions you have, like all the objects, how can they be related to this particular object, okay? Okay, more question on that? Okay, if there is no question, so I only have 10 minutes, but I really want to give you the context. So I won't be able to do all I plan, but at least to give you the context of why you're going to do this computation in the tutorial this afternoon. Otherwise, it's going to be a bit abstract. And I'm going to post anyway the lecture notes so you will have access to a bit further. So we focus on a given approximation. We use it in a specific case that turned out to be even useful to compute some exact system. Now let's look at another approximation method when you cannot, that is going to be useful for some system that you cannot solve exactly. And the idea here is when you're going to consider Hamiltonian of the form where H0 is going to be something that you know to solve exactly. And then this is going to be treated as a small perturbation. So meaning that you want that, the expectation value of this thing is much smaller than, your the system you start with, okay? And then the idea is that you will be able, what we're going to be able to do in this perturbative theory, so we're going to look at different objects, but usually we're going to be able to compute explicitly something related to that and use that to get an expansion in lambda of some quantity. So let me write what is going to be the general strategy and which kind of object we're going to be interested in, and it's going to be related to Elizabeth's question about also energy level. So this is the next topic I want to cover. And I won't have time to go very far. So we want to consider perturbation theory, and as mentioned, is to deal with system of this type where we know we can decompose it exactly. One part can be solved exactly, and the other part is going to be treated as a perturbation. And so this is, we're going to use it to determine, and I'm going to use two kind of example, determine, so for example, the ground state. Energy, and the strategy will be always the same. It could also be used to determine time ordered correlator. And this is going to be the generalization of that in the QFT context is going to be super important on, let's say, the ground state. Would be of the, so this mean that we want to look at something like this. And you will see that, this is the kind of thing you're going to look at when you want to study scattering amplitude in QFT, so kind of important. And the idea is that all this, these two things is, if they can be, we're going to use the fact that they can be expressed as an expression involving the propagator. So meaning that we're going to use involving propagator that. And since we are, what we know from the path integral is that we can represent this propagator as a path integral, it's what we're going to use. So usually this would be kind of the first step, is which function, how can we express one of these objects as an expression involving the propagator, okay? So I'm not going to do things explicitly now, I just want to give you this general kind of, let's say it's a general strategy. And then we focus on these two examples, okay, tomorrow. And so the idea is that this is going to be done like we want to do that for a system that cannot be solved exactly, so we go to perturbation theory. And what we're going to use here is what we call functional method in the Euclidean path integral. Okay, so here it's for system. But then, so again, what I said is that we cannot solve exactly, but we're going to use the fact that the system we're going to consider, we can separate the Lagrangian into kind of a free part. And by free, it's not going to be V equals zero, but it can be quadratic here, so it could be the harmonic oscillator, okay? So it's more than, it's more than free, in fact. And an interacting part. Which is just what is beyond quadratic, okay? So for example, we're going to consider the example of the anharmonic oscillator. It's also what you have to deal with in the homework that I sent yesterday, where you add a contribution in x to the power 4 in your Lagrangian. Okay. So then if we are able to do that, then what we want to do is via path integral, it's to write, to use the fact that usually the interacting propagator can be written in terms of a free propagator. So by free, again, it's a it can be quadratic here, but where you add a source term. Okay, so usually what does it mean? This means that you want to consider S of G of X that is going to be your usual Lagrangian, okay, your free one that can be the example, the harmonic oscillator here, plus you add a term and so you see that here, this is just adding a linear contribution to your Lagrangian. Okay, so here, what can you read, Elizabeth? Or?
Sorry.
No. Okay, so what I'm saying is just what you want to do now is to work with a system described by this kind of action, where your action is the usual one, the quadratic one, meaning, well, the by zero here, I mean the free one that can be quadratic, so it can be the harmonic oscillator, so the one that we deal with before. Plus you add this kind of term, which is a J of tau times X of tau, okay? So it's linear in X. So you see, if you remember what was the expression of your, that we had before, that K is going to be a constant times the exponential times D of A. The A is not going to be changed, because it only involves the second derivative of your potential, and here it's a linear one. So what is going to be changed is the classical part, in fact, the classical solution. And this is what you're going to have to do this afternoon in the tutorial. So it's this section. Which is, you're going to compute explicitly what is this free propagator. With your source term can be compute evaluated explicitly. And in fact, to do that, you're really going to use what we just did this morning, okay, for the harmonic oscillator, except that what is going to change is going to be the classical solution. Because now you're going to deal with, if you look at your equation of motion, it's almost the same, except that you have a term minus g on the other side of tau. So to find the more general solution, you will have to deal. So are you familiar with Green function? Yeah. OK, so this is what you're going to do this afternoon, is to play with Green function here. So again, you will have Gaussian integral. It's going to be still a Gaussian integral here, but you need also to add a Green function to find. This is going to be able to find explicitly what is x of c in the context where you add a source term. Okay, so this is going to be mainly what you're going to compute explicitly in the tutorial. And then once you have that, let me give you the last step that is kind of nice. I'm a bit late. So the last point that we're going to go through. So we're going to go through this kind of methodology for two different things, so kind of twice in a different context, just because it's a very important approximation method that you're going to use a lot in QFT too. So then the idea is that the interacting propagator can be written in terms of the free propagator. With the source. With source. And in terms, usually, and to do things explicitly, you will have to go to a kind of perturbative expansion. Okay, and you can compute at any order, but it will have to be at a perturbation expansion. And this is going to be usually what we're going to show is that the interacting propagator can be written in terms of this one by acting by functional derivative. Okay, so here what you will have to do is just once you have this object that you're going to compute explicitly in the tutorial today, then to get the interacting one, you're just going to do some functional derivative on this one. And in fact, we're going to see with the weak theorem that this problem is just a problem in combinatorics. At the end, you can transform this kind of problem as a combinatorics problem. And which has a nice solution in terms of diagrammatic representation. And here what you would get is what give rise to Feynman diagrams. So we're going to see in these two examples that we can compute explicitly this functional derivative at this first order. But then if you want to go further, instead of usually we use this there is a nice way to see which term are going to contribute that appear naturally in this when things are written this way and where Feynman diagrams are going to appear. So I'm going to stop here because I'm super late.